Hello, hello, hello. My name is Alba K. Supreme, and it is my pleasure to once again bring you another installment of the Arts Africa Show. You are tuned in to Africa Global Radio, and we are streaming from our base here in Airport Accra, Ghana, to the whole wide world. Every little nook, cranny, corner of this globe, you can get Africa Global Radio. It is the 4th of December, and it is the first Saturday of the last month of the year. In a few weeks' time, we are going to be smack bang at the middle of 2022 with New Year's resolutions in place and a desire for 2022 to be so much better than 2021. The time is 12 p.m. GMT, and it is the 4th of December, as I told you. And we are here on another journey where we showcase and encourage and promote all that is positive artistically and creatively in Africa. So it's time to delve into more African excellence. We are on AfricaGlobalRadio.com, on Instagram and Twitter. We are at AF Global Radio, Facebook, Africa Global Radio. And of course, you can send us a WhatsApp on +233 2070 646 680. Arts Africa is brought to you by Africa Global Radio. Now, each week I send out a shout out to our partner station, which is up in Wa in the Upper West region of Ghana, and it is W93.5 FM. People, if you are in the Y environs, tune in where, you know, it's a good station. It has to be good. If not, it wouldn't be a partner station to Africa Global Radio. So make sure if you're within the environs that you tune in. Now, we're going to go into our first song. And our first track of today is very much an indication of part of what our guest does, or should I say one of the many things that she does. I know I'm sounding cryptic, but it's all going to be very clear very, very soon when she joins us in the studio. So we are going to start the show with Welcome Home by the one and only Osibisa. Okay, so that was Osibisa, and you know, that song is like, yeah, Ghanaians abroad, you know, when they arrive, and it's that you are welcome home. Now, before our guest joins us in the studio, let's have a taster of what is available on Africa Global Radio during the week.
Karibu, Saubona, Ekabo, Sanunku. Hello and welcome to the Africa Daily Show on Africa Global Radio, a daily magazine program that highlights happenings in Africa and the diaspora. On this show, we bring you positive news across the African continent, newspaper headlines across Africa, and trends on social media with Epifania Jokotogligui.
Good news.
For today's AGR good news, we have Uganda starts mass production of its first smartphone.
Today we Remember, a segment that revisits significant days in global African history. Interesting facts about Africa on the Did You Know segment.
Did you know
DR Congo is the largest producer of cobalt in the world? Individuals and groups who are contributing to the progress of Africa on African Champions.
So
Paris Bosire is our African champion for today.
And what's on and what's new? I, Mami Aba Amuaminta, presents what's happening in the world of events, conferences, trade fairs, the latest in music, books, films, fashion, arts, theater, and the newest trends.
What's new?
So you're a fan of music?
I am actually.
And you know Davido?
Oh yeah, even in my sleep.
So yeah. His A Good Time album has hit 1 billion streams on all platforms worldwide.
Wow.
This and much more great music across Africa and the diaspora.
Join us on Monday to Friday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. GMT.
On Africa Global Radio. Our story, our growth, our future.
I love Africa Global Radio.
Okay, welcome to the show, Ivy Prosper. Now, you are a woman of many, many talents, content creator, TV host, producer, fixer, author, public speaker, fashionista, and social media manager for the Year of Return and Beyond the Return Initiative. This is just to mention a few things. So, welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking the time to join us today.
I appreciate being invited.
Okay, now before we get into the show, let me congratulate you on being awarded the Best Travel Creator at the YouTube Festival.
Thank you.
Tell us about your channel. Tell us about your channel, that one, what it covers, and then the award, and then what does winning this, what are the benefits that are going to come from it?
Well, it was, my channel was started initially. I didn't plan on doing what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, when I started my YouTube channel, the whole purpose was to share my capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So people do CVs, resumes when they're applying for jobs. So for me, when I was looking for work in the media industry as a journalist, to producing, I used it as my opportunity to show what I can do. So I would use the links from my videos to share with producers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then it happened to be that when I came to Ghana in 2011, and I went to La Palme, and then I just took a quick video. At the time, it was on a BlackBerry and walking around and saying, wow, this place is beautiful. This is Africa, changing the narrative of Africa. And I was just doing it to share with my friends and family back in Canada so they can see my experiences, not knowing that years later people would be really interested in Ghana. So it was around 2018 when I did a video of, you know, top things in Ghana, positive and negative things in Ghana, when suddenly people were watching. I was like, oh, people really want to hear about Ghana.
Yes.
So since then, I've been doing a lot of content based on my experiences here, when I travel to different places in Ghana, or when I go to different events and festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And then I interview people who are, you know, change makers who are doing things in Ghana, on the continent, and making an impact. So my channel basically is stories from Africa and the African diaspora. Right now, most of my content is in Ghana, but eventually I would like to spread my wings and start doing it in other parts of the continent as well.
What's the name of the channel? So people listening now can quickly hop on a YouTube and check it out.
It's just my name, Ivy Prosper.
Ivy Prosper.
I keep it simple.
Okay, Ivy Prosper. Two words.
Yes.
Okay, so you said you weren't expecting to win this.
No, I was not expecting it, because I was in a category with, you know, other content creators that have some great content traveling in Ghana and other parts of Africa. So people like Wode Maya and Stella Chanelli, who were in the same category as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when they called my name, I was sitting there and I looked around, like left and right, everybody who was there. I was like,
Is there another Ivy?
Yes, I was looking around like, me?
Yeah.
Really? Me?
Yeah.
They eventually told me that they didn't look at only how many subscribers you have and look at, you know, because some people have these amazing drone shots in every video. And sometimes people are attracted to, you know, these spectacular images. And they said they also look at the content and look at, you know, what information you're providing for people. And I make it a goal to try to provide accurate information when people want to come to Ghana. I give factual information. If I get some things I learn at a press conference or whatever it may be, I actually share that information accurately. Whereas I've seen other channels, I'm not going to name people, but I've seen other channels where someone will say something and I'll be like, oh my goodness, they just shared wrong information. And now there's like tens of thousands of people who are going to believe that information. Yeah. So I do my best to provide accurate information. So they said that they looked at who voted for you, the number of votes you got, as well as people who looked at the panel of judges looking at the content that you're sharing. Right. Yeah. So it was a real honor to have been selected as the winner of their first award ceremony here in Ghana. It was the first one in Ghana. And over the last year, YouTube is finally looking at Africa. Over the last year or two, they have the YouTube Africa, they have YouTube Black Voices, and they're looking at what content creators are doing from the continent and sharing with the world. There was even a representative of YouTube for Sub-Saharan Africa who came to visit Ghana a few months ago and met with a few content creators, because they're really seeing that there's a buzz and there's a hub of people here who are really, really interested in sharing stories. So with this award, I think what it's doing for me is it's going to help people to see who I am, because I think there's people who may not have heard of me who, when I won the award, suddenly are looking at my channel. And for me, it was a source of encouragement, because to be honest, I was feeling a little bit discouraged at a point, that thinking, is this something I should still be doing? Because there's so much competition out there with the YouTube space now. A lot of people from the diaspora and from Africa are coming to Ghana. So there's suddenly this huge increase of videos coming from Ghana. You have people who've moved here from Nigeria, from Kenya, from different places to come and make content about Ghana. And so the space is becoming crowded. And so I thought to myself, should I continue doing this? But this award actually shows me that, I got to keep going. I got to keep going.
Keep going.
Yes.
Okay. So how has your week been?
My week has been quite busy. We are heading into a busy time with tourism in Ghana. December is the busiest season of the year. And I do work in the tourism industry. So we're getting into a really busy time at my office right now. So it's been a hectic beginning of the week.
And it's going to stay that way
until the first week of January.
Okay. We are going to take a quick musical break, and then we're going to get into the interview proper. You sent us a song, Bisakedi, Brother, Brother.
Yes.
Why do you like that so much?
You know, there's something about that song that makes my heart feel this love of Africa. And it's like a sense of brotherhood, sisterhood. When that song was really popular, I was actually back in Canada. So I came in Ghana 2011, was here a couple of years, went back to Canada, and then I came back to Ghana 2016. So that song, when that song was popular and it was playing, I'm in Canada and I'm playing that song every day. And my brother was like, wow, you really Ghanaian now.
Oh.
That's what my brother said. You're really a Ghanaian now. Because
that's what my brothers say to me when we talk on the phone. They say, you sound so Ghanaian. Yeah.
So I said, I don't know, just something about that song. What it is I think the melody is like merges the old with the new. So the way the melody of the song and the instruments are, it sounds to me like something that is something my parents would listen to from the high life days. And then you have that modern Afrobeats sound, and it comes together. So it's like a piece of my parents with a piece of me at the same time. I think that's what really strikes me.
I think Kofi Kinata also has that kind of that thing, that two generations thing. So we are going to listen to Brother, Brother, and then we're going to come back, and then the conversation is going to continue.
Brother, 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 me niya je, fuck me. Me ya juma juwa na divide. Me ya kumasi bema. Me ji me niya no complain.
grand to swamaba. Miss I baby, Grammy Gonongo, I bet if you are a woman, I'm a banner. Sikas so good, ah, whom I draw me webber. Who shall me spoke to a family burger? Man of my dream and frame. Ah, woman in Germany, ah, who go was so frame. A man of my dream and frame. Ah. I'm winning, winning, don't think, don't think, don't think. Yeah, no one's higher, virgin. If he's answer my virgin, so what if Papa could put to Manto? True pimpy, now if you got us to talk upon to Latamemo, yeah, Papio, and one who doesn't see me on my bremen, yeah. A man of Monsieur Manfremi. Mama min jimeni, ukoko asu afremi, manu monjure man fremi. Na mete papa no done ebe, ati ibe de oba, aman po jine de min tumin chile, takura de munso mama mi, listi na musi abaze, vota na paso je ho, akra funi west munso re, wrong funi zandra, enta male fa me kan oka, gana funi na munso mwe. Brother, brother, many a day. My age, you might want to daddy. Me, your capini, very much. Me, Jimmy, I don't complain. And can I so to an apple? Remy Gonongo, I bet if you are a well, I mean, I'm a banner. As the castle so Kumano, who me a Jammy Wabba, who Jammy's go to have me waga, Mano Monsure Man Fremi, Umamin Jimeni, Ukoko was one Fremi, Mano Monsure Man Fremi, Mano Monsure Man Fremi, Umamin Jimeni, Ukoko was one Fremi, Mano Monsure Man Fremi.
I listen to Africa Global Radio. Make una tune in, oh, now that the better tunes they come out from.
Exactly. So where should we start? You've done a lot.
Mm-hmm. I've had quite a storied life, is what I often say.
So start us from early life, skills and experience you've gathered on your journey to reaching where you are now.
Oh my goodness, that's like a long story.
Give us the abridged version.
So I actually I have a degree in fashion design and apparel management, and there's a lot of people who don't know that. So my dream was to be a fashion designer, big time fashion designer, mm-hmm. in New York City and all the big lights and everything. That was my dream for many, many years.
Not Milan, New York.
Yeah, New York was always on my
radar.
Oh yeah. When I was like 12, 13 years old, our drama class at school, we had this teacher, Mr. Aneo, and he taught us how to sing New York, New York at the time. And I mean, my singing voice is terrible, so I'm not going to do that. But
what? That's Frank Sinatra?
Yes, a Frank Sinatra song, New York, New York.
Start spreading
the news. Yes. So I would walk around the house singing that song, "I'm Leaving Today."
And would you?
My legs would be kicking. Oh, yes. My legs would be kicking in the air. Yeah. I'd be like.
And you would slow it down slightly so that you would be able to do.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I've done all that too.
And my mother would be like, "Oh, Jaiwasem." You know, so I always dreamed of New York. And then especially because of being, I did modeling as well.
Yes.
I'm 6 foot one and I've been this height since I was 15 years old. So when I was 13, I was around 5 foot 10, 5'11". Mm-hmm. And at that time I went to some modeling agency and I did some modeling course. And that was the first time that I was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm around other tall people. Because everywhere I went, I was always like looking down at everyone. Mm-hmm. But I was like, well, this is nice. So with modeling, New York was the place as well. That's the place to go if you wanted to make it. Coming from Canada, that New York was the next step. Mm-hmm. So I eventually studied fashion design, and I did...
You didn't model?
Oh, I did do the modeling. Yes, okay. I did do the modeling. I love doing fashion shows. Most of the work that I did was in Canada. Mm-hmm. I did go to New York to go and do auditions and try out for things. And I would never make it because I was always told that I was too fat. They would always tell me I was too fat, my hips were too wide, my nose is too this. Always something. Oh, yes. In those days, it was like they wanted a super, super thin models. And
which wasn't really the black woman.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really, really hard on the self-esteem as a young woman. And so I pursued it from early teenage years up until in my mid-20s when I remember deciding I wanted to cut my hair because I used to chemically relax my hair. And then I went to my agent and I was like, I think I want to go natural. And
he went,
yes. Oh my goodness, it's hard enough. He was like, you can't. It's hard enough to get you modeling jobs as a dark-skinned model and as a model with bigger hips than mm-hmm. the average model. Like, it's hard enough for us to get you work. And now you want to add natural hair to it? He was like, no, you can't, you can't. And then that was when I was like, you know what?
I'm done.
I don't want to do this anymore. So then I said I wasn't going to do it anymore because I was tired of always being on a diet, always like worrying about measurements because you go to auditions, they pull out the measuring tape, they want to measure and see, are your hips really the same size as what it says on your comp card? For those who don't know, in the modeling industry, they had this thing called a comp card, which basically is like your business call card as a model. So it has your pictures on it, and you'll show like three different looks, whether it's a business, you know, beauty, a sexy look, that kind of thing. Three different looks minimum on the card. And then your measurements are there. Your bust, your waist, your hips, your height, your shoe size, your dress size are all on the card. So they would bring it out, measure you, and you're in front of people, be like, oh, you're too big. You're too big. You're not going to fit the clothes. And so you get that all the time. Oh, yeah. It gets to be like, ugh. You know, you're struggling to lose this weight and you didn't even get to where they want you to be. So I just got tired of it at the time. So then I stopped doing it. But once I got into my 30s, I started doing some modeling here and there for people who were fine with the way that my body is. I enjoyed that.
They wanted a natural looking.
Yes, yes. So when people ask me to do things as I am, then I'm cool. But if you're going to tell me to do it and I have to lose weight, then I was like...
A diet where you only eat like 120 calories.
Oh, it was horrible, horrible. I'll never forget my agent. When I was 19, we were going to go to New York to go and see if we can get some jobs. She said, you have to lose 10 pounds in the next 3 days.
Huh?
Yes. And she gave this diet to me. It was like, breakfast is half a cup of oatmeal. Lunch is half a cup of white rice with half a cup of peas. Dinner is half a cup of white rice.
No protein.
No. The dinner is half a cup of white rice with half a cup of tuna. And it has to be tuna in water, not tuna in oil.
You see my face?
And with half a cup of maybe some corn or peas. And that's it for the day. And if you're craving a sweet, drink Diet Coke because it has one calorie. That's what she said. And I was like... What? She's like, it works, it works, it works. You'll lose 10 pounds in 3 days. And I'm like, I don't think I can do this, you know?
The horrible diet you've given me.
Yeah, it's, and I actually tried. I mean, when you're that age and you're like, you really want something,
yeah,
you're desperate.
Yeah.
And I tried, but it was like, you're constantly like, you're tired, you're hungry, you're like, you get the shakes. And so, so eventually I, moved out of that. I worked in the retail industry, in footwear, and eventually I was an assistant buyer in women's casual clothing and shoes. And when my father was sick in the hospital with cancer, that was when he talked a lot about life and trying things that you've always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always thought about television broadcasting and journalism, film production, that type of stuff, because when I was modeling, I did a lot of background work in movies and TV shows, because a lot of filming happens in Canada. A lot of people don't realize a lot of productions happen in Canada because the cost sometimes of some things is cheaper. It's easier to close down streets in Toronto than in New York, and you can make Toronto look like New York. So a lot of places people would come to Canada. And so being on set and I would see how things were being done, I'd be so fascinated with things. And I just always had it in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. So I had volunteered at a local TV station just to see if it's something I would really like to do. And I enjoyed it because I would go around and interview people. So then after spending time talking to people who worked in television, asking them their advice, and they all told me that I should go back to school and study radio and television. I didn't want to. I wanted to just jump into it because I felt like I had the skills to do it. But they were like, when you go back to school, you can make a network of people, and sometimes mm-hmm. professors mm-hmm. can connect you to different things. Okay. So they were like, if anything, that's what it can help you do. And then they said, and also, these days, a lot of TV stations don't give internships unless you are actually registered in a school.
Okay.
That's Canada and the U.S. Unless you're actually registered in a school, because then it becomes part of your school program. They have quotas to meet with getting students from different colleges and stuff, mm-hmm. colleges mm-hmm. and universities. So I was like, okay, that's fine. So I decided to go back to school. I did a quick one-year program at Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. They've now changed their name to Specs Howard School of Media Art mm-hmm. in Detroit, Michigan. And so that was an amazing experience. So after my dad passed away, I left my job in fashion, went back to school to start pursuing this new chapter of life. Nice. So I had an amazing experience at that school. I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And I got a great internship at NBC.
Oh, wow.
In their Detroit location, which was Local 4. And it was awesome. It taught me a lot about the news industry. It made me learn that news is business like anything else. Yes, it's giving information, but news is business at the end of the day. Because there were stories that I thought would be told and weren't told because it doesn't necessarily meet their target audience, or they feel they won't get enough viewers based on the particular story. But that was a great experience because, as an intern, I wasn't doing, because some interns, they get coffee, they're doing photocopies, they're doing errands.
Watching and things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But I was fortunate enough that I was actually going into the field. Mm. So my first couple of weeks, I was at the assignment desk. So the assignment desk was where you would sit and listen to the scanners of the police, fire department, and ambulance. So we'd be listening into the radio scanners
so
to see what breaking news comes up and chase
something.
It. Yeah. And then I would also look at their emails for press releases coming in and then answer phones for tips. So imagine you're trying to listen to scanners, you're trying to answer phones, you're trying to read emails all at the same time, and you can't miss it. Because if you miss something, they come to you. They're like, why did you miss this story? Look, CBS has it and we don't have it. Look, ABC has it and we don't
it's like that big recent story where that Australian reporter, he got the one interview.
Yes, with Adele. Yes.
And he didn't listen
to it.
Music.
Yeah.
He said he just missed it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
But that's a big miss. And it cost them a lot of money.
It cost them a ton.
Yeah. So
Sony
it's so important
to, you know, even let out the 20-minute
that was done.
Because they were just so furious.
And it just shows how important it is to not miss anything.
Yeah.
So eventually I moved from the assignment desk to go into the field.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they were short reporters at one point, and they were like, Ivy, you have to go out with the camera guy to go to cover this story. So then from then on, I was going out and we were going to stories. And it taught me that I would prefer doing lifestyle storytelling or documentary storytelling or creating films than doing hard news. Because mm-hmm. the hard newsroom, there's a lot of, it's time sensitive.
Yes.
And also, it can be depressing depending on the markets you're in as well. But because the news thrives on negative stories.
Yeah, you're hearing about deaths and shootings and child molesters and things, it's going to mess you up.
Oh, totally. Because in the newsroom, what I noticed was the happiest people who came in, they were like chipper and smiling like from morning to night, was the sports reporter,
mm-hmm.
The weather person, and the person who did the traffic. They were like, everybody's so happy
the
all the time.
People's like, hey, hey.
You know? Yeah, and the sports person might be upset. Their team lost, but I mean, it's nothing that's going to change their lives. But you, like, for example, we go on a shift and you go, I remember the camera guy, his name was Vic. Vic was like, Ivy, are you ready to see your first dead body? I was like, what? Mm-hmm. I was like, no, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. And we were going to a place where there was a man who'd been dead for a few days and they believed he was decomposing. They thought maybe it might be drug related. And so it's like, imagine you go to a scene. There's a person who's died. Yeah. And then the next story is someone who's been killed. And then the next story is someone who was raped. And that's your shift. And then you go back again the next day, there's another murder, then there's another killing, then there's so it's like day after day, if you're always going to like negative news, it's just always it gets to drain your spirit.
Yeah.
It takes a thick skin. Yeah. So that was a great experience that I learned from. From there, the economy had started to crash in the United States and Canada, and created a global situation where there was a lot of unemployment. So after my internship, I thought I would get work after, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. What ended up happening was they said that they would love to hire me, but they can't justify hiring a Canadian at a time when their own people are unemployed in high numbers.
Yeah.
So I went back to Canada and started looking for work in film, television, broadcasting industry. And it was tough because mm-hmm. what happens in the U.S. economy affects Canada as well. And a lot of TV stations there were like takeovers and mergers and people also losing work. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, man, I'm a new graduate and I'm going up against people who are experienced. You know, so fortunately, you know, once in a while I would get freelance gigs. Fortunately, I started doing freelance work for Fiva TV, mm-hmm. an African station
okay.
that launched called, Fiva TV.
Fiva TV.
Yep. Owned by a Nigerian man who decided that, four of them, who decided that there was content needed coming from Africa and the diaspora. So they launched this TV station.
An African community.
Yes. Yes. So I did freelance work for them, which was great. I had some great experiences with doing red carpet and different types of interviews. One of my favorites was interviewing Idris Elba. He came and did red carpet at Beasts
you
of No Nation.
Faint.
Oh, I was like, oh, Idris Elba. Oh my gosh, I'm getting interviewed Idris Elba. I was like, ah. And I didn't get to do a long one. I wanted to do a long one.
Is he as fine in person?
Yeah, yes, yes. Oh yeah, he's a very handsome man. Very handsome. And he was tall. I'm 6'1". I was like, oh, he actually is tall.
Okay.
So I was impressed because usually when I meet people,
you're kind of looking.
Yes. Like, yes. But him was just like, oh, okay. He's like just maybe a little bit taller than I am.
Nice.
So so that was a really cool interview to do as well. And so within time, with getting frustrations of trying to get consistency with the media stuff, my mom was like, because I was like feeling frustrated at life mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. you know, where is this going? And my mom was like, oh, why don't you go to Ghana and just check things out just to refresh your mind? It wasn't a come to Ghana look for work. It was come to Ghana, refresh your mind, like a reset.
That's so interesting because first it was your father that put you on a path of reset.
Yes.
And then your mother.
Ooh, good observation.
It's quite interesting.
Oh, good observation. Oh, yeah, wow. That's a great observation.
No, because the moment you said it, and I thought, oh my God, but her father before he passed said.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Mother's like,
yes.
You know, which
yes.
is what parents should do.
Yes.
But I'm going to pull you from that. Let's come to this documentary series, Sex and Love Around the World.
Oh,
that,
gosh.
Ghanaians. Shall I tell you something? They contacted me to be the local producer.
Oh, they did.
I looked at it and something just said, girl, take 10 steps back away from this thing. And so I moonwalked my way out and I sat and waited.
Yeah.
And what happened, I knew.
Yeah, yeah.
But
so,
what was your experience like working on that?
It was a great experience because for me, it was my first time working on a production with CNN, mm-hmm. In a production that was for CNN,
mm-hmm.
and so I learned a lot about the way that the production process was for them anyway. And at the time I was working with a film production company called Refine Creative.
Okay.
And so I got to see processes of how things are done, which was really, really great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way that it started off is not the way that I thought it would end up. As you said, you took steps away from it.
Sometimes there are things you can just snip.
Yes.
It's like, oh my God, this is amazing. CNN, Christina. Ooh, but then you sniff it. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. So it was a great experience, but also a learning lesson at the same time. Because you realize, and for anybody who's listening and is interested in working in film production or radio production for a foreign entity, you have to also understand that they have their narrative that they want to tell as well. You may have something in your mind of what you want to tell, but they have something in their mind they want to tell as well.
And they're always in control of post-production.
Exactly. You don't have any control over the editing. You may have seen something great, but then when the final edit comes out, you're like, where's this part?
Or once they splice things together, and
it can make it look like
the position. Because just at the beginning of this year, I shot an agricultural documentary for CNN up in the north. And yeah, I put a list together for the editor, but what came out, I'm like, there were amazing storytelling things that I'd specifically shot.
Yes.
But they know what they want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Like, you know, I'll say this. I remember that, I mean, that when we, the part that people really, really got upset about was the Moesha clip that was released as the teaser. Mm. And what happened was a lot of people ended up getting angry at her and putting...
People were upset at her.
Yes, people... She had a lot of backlash that I don't think she deserved to have. And when I say that, I'm not justifying women dating for money or dating for certain things, because it's not something that I would do personally. But I also think that she was telling her truth, and it's a truth that...
But she was...
She was vilified.
She was shown as if talking about Ghanaian women in general.
Yes.
I didn't see anything where she says, I don't know about other people, but for me, this is... But there was an impression given that no Ghanaian woman can make it on her own. She has to have sex with somebody, which not only vilifies the women, but it also vilifies our men, because it means that they only see women as objects.
Right, right.
That they pay to get something for.
Right.
And so that it gives the impression that we are not capable of loving relationships.
One thing I will say is, I mean, there was a lot that was cut out of the conversation.
Sure, definitely.
There was a lot that she said that would have redeemed her, that people are not aware of. And I'm just now trying to think if I'm even able to say it. I'm just thinking what the contract was.
Because one of the reasons that I was not keen, because I've worked with other companies like that, and I just thought, I don't understand the agenda of this. And the way countries that are non-African were dealt with, it was a very different thing.
Different narrative.
It was a very different narrative. And if the narrative had been the same across the board, yeah, but it was like, now, woman, you know, what
is
this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do know that she did say that if she had a daughter, she wouldn't want her daughter doing the same thing. And she understands. And, you know, I think that it's very easy for people to get... I mean, and that part wasn't in the final edit. So I'm just saying, yeah, that part was not in the final edit when she said that, because the interview was about 2 hours.
But again, controlling narrative.
Yes.
The whole point of releasing that Moesha part was to rile people.
Mm-hmm.
That was the full agenda, because they talked to queen mothers. They talked to a range of other people, and they could have used
any of those other clips.
But the whole thing was to sensationalize and get people upset, obviously, maybe to force people to watch. But if you don't know a culture, there are people who say, oh, is this it? I'm not even going to waste my time.
Yes.
The rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, it was, like I said, it was a learning experience for me, because I have been approached by other foreign media about doing stories, and in my gut, I felt like, no, I don't feel right about this.
Mm.
Like, now I know, I decipher and I think about it. You know, there was a particular organization that approached me about something, and the pitch that I had given, they were like, but there's no tension in this story. We need more tension. Can't you add this and this and this so that it's a little bit more jarring, so that more people
can
they were like, we want our audience to see something that is going to show more conflict in the story, but there wasn't enough conflict in the story. And I was like, but that's not what I was trying to do. I was actually trying to show what this particular person is doing that's elevating the community, but they wanted something that was going to contrast that elevation of community.
I mean, it's a bit like, you might say, conspiracy theory or whatever, but I mean, we have enough experience, 400 years with a certain group of people, to understand that, you know, which brings me to the year of return.
Yes.
What is it? Why is it needed? Is it necessary?
I think that, I think it was necessary. So I'll answer the first question, what is it? Because a lot of people just looked at it as it was just a time for people to have parties and mm-hmm. events. So the Year of Return was the commemoration of the 400-year anniversary of the first documented ship of enslaved Africans that arrived in the U.S. Now, we add documented because
That's 1619.
Yeah, August 1619. And they arrived in Virginia. Mm-hmm. Now, in commemorating that, Ghana recognized that Ghana had the largest number of slave forts and dungeons that captured Africans were held in. So Ghana had the most of any African country. And so in doing that, Ghana also wanted to have some kind of atonement and reconciling of the global African family. So with the Year of Return, it was about inviting people from the global diaspora to come to Africa and choose Ghana as the place you're coming to when you come to Africa. So in doing that, they also recognize that a lot of times when people travel somewhere, they want somewhere to go. They want activities to be involved in. So the events calendar was created in a way that it provided something that people can do when they come to Ghana, because people will come, they'll go to the slave forts and they'll have that emotional experience. Then they think, okay, now what is there anything
and
I can
they
do?
They go to Khakum and then maybe Willy Falls or something and it's over and done.
Right. So they want
unless to, they go to the north.
Yeah, so they wanted to add some activities. So that's why the events calendar was added. And people don't realize there were events the whole year from the 1st of January until the 2nd or 3rd of January 2020. So mm-hmm. for the full year, there was things that was going on. But a lot of people focused on the December activities because that's when there were the most activities because there was more people who were in the country. But the busiest months were July, August, December. That's when the most activity was happening. So the events all cover different areas, whether it was whether it's a party or whether it was a conference, because there were conferences that mm-hmm. were business conferences mm-hmm. that gave people an opportunity to learn about mm-hmm. investing and stuff like that.
Okay.
So the Year of Return was 2019. It was a very successful year. Now we're into Beyond the Return, which is a 10-year initiative. A Decade of African Renaissance is the theme. And being the follow-up to Year of Return, it is a follow-up to feedback that we receive from after the Year of Return. People would say, well, I came, now I want to invest. How can I do that? I came, well, now I want to see, what about the cultural festivities? Mm-hmm. We didn't see culture. We just saw, you know, the events in Accra. So that's why this time around,
you need to tailor it more
yes.
to what people...
Yeah, so there are seven pillars that are the foundation of Beyond the Return. Mm-hmm. And those seven pillars are Experience Ghana, which is the activities and events, mm-hmm. The tourist type of things. There's Give Back Ghana, which is about giving back to the community, because okay. a lot of people came and they said, well, we had a great time, but what can we do to give back? Mm-hmm. So that's endorsing events and activities that involve giving back. For example, there's a group of African-American men who've been putting boreholes across the country. They've done 50 so far. Their goal is to do 100.
Nice.
Then there's Invest in Ghana, which is about investments, business opportunities, connecting with local mm-hmm. People to do business. There's Brand Ghana, which is about branding the country, creating our own narrative to brand Ghana in our own way. There's Promoting Pan-African Heritage and Innovation, which is about Pan-Africanism, continuing on with that spirit in Ghana. There is, what's the other one? Celebrate Ghana, which is the traditional festivals, celebrating culture. We've put some of those cultural festivals onto our calendar. And then there's one more. Oh my goodness, I'm drawing a blank at the moment.
Because I'm holding my finger at
there's
six.
One more.
I'm waiting for this.
There's one more. Oh, Diaspora. How could I forget this one? This is so important. The Diaspora Pathways to Ghana. This is about connecting the diaspora in ways they want to move to Ghana. So people are asking about residency. They're asking about citizenship. Mm-hmm. They want ways to do education. So right now the government is working on the Homeland Return Act. And so that is an act that's supposed to be helping to facilitate getting citizenship faster, getting residency quicker.
I've met some African Americans who live in here who complain about, you know, those things.
Yeah, so it's in Parliament right now. I don't know how long it's going to take for it to pass, but
at least it's there.
Yes,
to begin with.
Yes.
Why do people from the diaspora, specifically the U.S., mm-hmm. Gravitate towards Ghana? I ask because people can now do their DNAs, and you can get closer information or get a good idea of which spot you might be from. Like my friend Shalonda, she came to Ghana. She was here for a few years. She returned back to the U.S. for whatever reason. But she'd done her DNA, and she was literally like 85% Fula from Guinea. Yet she had no interest in going to Guinea. She chose to come here. So for me, I always think it's maybe something about language because the average American, is lazy about learning other languages. So English, and I think maybe we're a little bit more westernized. Because if you do your DNA and it puts you in Cameroon somewhere, Chale, at least go check the place out small. But because Ghana isn't the only place in Africa. Mm-hmm. And so I know I lived in Cuba for years. Cubans, they're fine over there. Brazilian, blacks in Brazil, up in Bahia, they're fine over there. They acknowledge that they come from Africa, but they are Brazilians. And the culture, everything is important, but they don't need to leave to come here. Now, I know African Americans have a very specific type of situation where the country that they come from doesn't like them. And so why here if you can do your DNA and actually find where you're from?
I think you've touched on a couple of things that I agree with, English being one of them, that Ghana being an English-speaking country, people feel comfortable because it's an easier place to...
But the moment you step out of Accra...
Yes, the moment you leave Accra, which is why a lot of them stay in Accra, or a lot of them stay in Cape Coast.
Yeah.
There's a lot who are in the Cape Coast, Elmina area.
And even Ibri was also a very hot spot.
Yes, yes. I think that they feel that Ghana welcomes them in a way that other countries haven't had the mainstream news about being welcomed. So, for instance, Ghana, even since Kwame Nkrumah, has been inviting people from the diaspora. Like Kwame Nkrumah, Martin Luther King came for...
And then they also use those same people for the coup activities as well. But yes, you're right. Ghana has, since Kwame Nkrumah's time, been saying, come home, come home. We didn't have DNA stuff.
No.
Initially, it was come home, come back to the African continent.
Right.
But now that you have your DNA,
yes.
What? Because Ghana can't. If 20 million African Americans decide they're coming to Ghana, it can't happen.
Yes.
It won't go well.
Yes.
You understand?
I understand.
But I see that maybe because Ghana is the one making the effort, and that's why people are.
Yes, I think I think it's because Ghana has, like, from the beginning been saying come, mm-hmm. and they see this history of Pan-Africanism from Ghana. They see that someone like, you know, W.E.B. Du Bois came here and ended up dying here and buried here. They see celebrities like, you know, Muhammad Ali.
And Padmore,
from those days all the way up until, you know, recent years when you're seeing, you know, some celebrity rappers and that kind of stuff come to Ghana.
In fact, a ton of them came, you know.
In 2019.
Yes.
Yes. But with
Samuel
the
Jacksons.
Yeah.
Harvey and all of these people.
A lot of people who they see someone else come, like, oh, what's happening in Ghana? I need to come to Ghana too. And then they come.
Yeah.
I also think that people who want to invest, from what I understand, even though investing in Ghana has its complexities, from what I understand, Ghana is easier than other African countries.
Okay.
So people also look at those things as well. Land, even though land is a complex situation in Ghana, and even Ghanaians have issues with trying to get land.
And I lost land. They stole my land.
It's the number one thing in the court systems is land disputes.
Yeah.
But it's easier, from what people have told me, to be getting land in Ghana as a foreigner than in other African countries.
I know, for instance, Nigeria, you wouldn't. Nigeria will not allow you as a foreigner to own land.
Right. But Ghana allows you to.
Yeah, but I mean, and I understand that. But somewhere along the line, because people are coming and they're buying tracts of land, one day we will be here. When they will tell us to pack our Ghana must go and leave because we don't own anything here. I mean, some of those things need to be taken into, you know, serious consideration, because you could end up, the average Ghanaian cannot buy land.
Mm-hmm.
If people from outside are coming and buying up, they buy up everything because the Chinese are buying like crazy. I mean, people, because it's been made easy, then what about your natives? I don't know if that's been taken into consideration.
I mean, that's something that the Lands Commission and the government needs to look into with respect to locals being able to buy land. I agree that it is difficult for a local person, especially considering the average local salaries, to be able to get land in Ghana.
And you know, you've even had situations like in certain parts where maybe Chinese have gone to do mining.
And they've destroyed the land.
Not even just destroying land, but the kind of conflicts with the youth in the area. And so, like, as you said, like, maybe they should take this into consideration, because when it gets to the point where land is being owned by others and you in your own hometown cannot get anything, there's going to be resentment for these people, and it's not their fault.
I can understand that.
You know, and...
On the other side, you have people who are from the diaspora community who say that they feel that they have a right to get some land because their ancestors were forcibly taken from here.
We understand.
And it wasn't their fault. I'm just saying that the other side that
And I've heard that. I've heard, you owe us. You, dude, if you go and do your DNA and it says that you're from Equatorial Guinea, don't come to Ghana and say you owe me. Because it wasn't just people taken from here. People were brought from other places here.
All over.
And so, yes, Ghana has to atone, but Ghana cannot be responsible for everything.
Right. Because, yes, a lot were brought from other countries and then migrated through Ghana eventually to the forts. Because even a lot of people haven't traveled to the Upper East. I recently did a video on my YouTube channel going to the Upper East region to a slave camp called Pikro Slave Camp.
Okay.
And
they come from that.
Yes. So they were saying how people were captured and brought there, even from, like, because it's close to Burkina Faso.
Yes.
And so a lot of people would be brought through there and eventually taken down and gone down the path and eventually end up at the coast.
And then you think of Badagry. Badagry was, I mean, we went there a couple of years ago with the, they have that thing of no return, and they took us on the whole trip that from the and then they even have the trading posts. So they have the post for the Dutch, the post for the English, and, you know, the museum and everything.
Yeah.
And then there's Senegal, Gore. I mean, plenty of people also went out that way, because I have come across a few people whose attitude is, you know, this is our right. And I'm saying, well, There are people who've been born, brought up here. Their ancestors have all lived here. They don't have anything. Mm-hmm. So what makes you think you deserve more here than, you know, they do?
Interesting perspective to bring about. Yeah, because that conversation, it's an ongoing conversation.
Yes,
it really is an ongoing conversation.
And then the thing is this. So if the government then goes to the next step and says, okay, fine, come, but do your DNA. If you are from within this region, we totally accept responsibility for you. But if not, will they then be prepared to head to
the other countries
or wherever?
Yeah, yeah. All right, now I know that Sierra Leone is giving people citizenship based on DNA.
And then I'm sure Liberia too.
Yes.
Because obviously a lot of people, Liberia was created specifically to have people.
Yes, that is true. Because there are some from Canada who were brought back. I think they went through Jamaica up to Canada, Nova Scotia area, and then brought back to down to Liberia.
And even the Tabon people in Usu, those were enslaved people who returned from Brazil.
Right, yes, where they have the Brazil house
that
area.
House and all that area, and even the house next to Brazil house used to be an auction place because it's crumbling now.
There's so much history and so much to the conversation.
And for me, I think maybe another thing that has been missed out is all this is being done, obviously, but the people here too. There needs to be a way that all this can also get out to people, because all these people come in, impact all the people here. And it kind of feels like there's a conversation going on where the vast majority of Ghana are not part of the are not part of the conversation or not really in the know.
I think that people have different priorities in their life, and that's what ends up happening with people not knowing what's going on with the conversation. So, for instance, in the year of return, there was a sentiment that was being expressed saying, well, how come the local Ghanaians aren't part of this? And so there was an effort made to make sure that there was communication made using media outlets that Ghanaians patronize.
Yes.
So we engaged with local
radio
so Peace FM and Adom Radio, so we can get some of the local language speaking programs.
How far does Peace and Adom go out of Accra, though? Or then they have the sister stations.
And then the Daily Graphic also committed to putting stories.
Who's reading the Daily Graphic? Yeah. Which of your kinky sellers and wachi sellers are reading Daily Graphic? I get what you mean. I mean, because for me, I think it's really important, because the vast majority of Ghanaians don't have much knowledge of our history.
That is number one.
Particularly the history and the role our ancestors played in the slave trade. Because, like as I said, I've met some angry people. You sold us. You owe us. And that sense of I'm entitled to something here and how dare you make it difficult. And the natives, too, are not having fun.
The native, I think that the education system needs to be adding this at a young age so people can learn. So I say that because I've spoken to people who they live in Cape Coast and they've never set foot in the dungeons. They've never learned about it. They don't know anything about it. They just know, and they just know they can come and sell things to this person that's coming, and they don't understand why they're coming. So there was, I remember the last time I was there, we were there with a tour group who came in from the US, and I was like, I really wish that young kids would be able to come in here in Ghana just to learn. And as I said it, all of a sudden these children walked in. I was like, oh, who are you? They're like, oh, we were walking by and we decided to come in. And the man let us in for free. Mm-hmm. They said, we walk past every day when we go to school, but we never come in.
The schools in Cape Coast would be taking their kids.
So they came in. So I said, join us on our tour. So they joined us. And when they joined in and the tour guide was talking about the atrocities of what happened in the women's dungeon of the colonialists, raping the women and then talking about how they put so many people in this small room, only one little window for air, defecating and urinating and menstruating in this room. And they were like, what?
Fight.
They were like, nobody told us this. We didn't know. This is what happened here. They were like, all along, we thought it was just this nice big building. We didn't know. And they said they were going to go home and tell their parents because they had no idea that this is what happened in this building. They were like between, I would say like between age 7 to 12, and the five of them, you know. So I feel like if the school system made an effort to have them learn young, now you have a generation of people who know what happened in the history. It's easier to connect with those coming from the diaspora and have those conversations. Yes. Because when you don't know, and then they feel like, why don't you know? How can you not know this?
Yes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're talking about even within the education system, but we have TV stations. This thing of we can do dramas, we can do stuff that, yes, is entertaining, but you're educating.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because, for example, you can watch there's so many entertaining movies made about historical Black American people.
Yes,
you know, you can watch a Martin Luther King movie and know what happened.
And
there's movies on them.
Yeah,
if there was entertaining movies on, you know, history here, I think that it could also be helpful as well. Whether it's history about the slave trade or history about our kings and queens of the past in Ghana.
One year I was at a film festival in Cape Town. And at the exhibitors section, you know, I went and I was, I think I was wearing a T-shirt with Lumumba on it, a picture of Lumumba on it. And we were talking to some people and they were like, oh, they want to do a movie on Kwame Nkrumah. And the whole thing was come in here to see if they could get the investment here. Because obviously it would be really, I mean, till today. So clearly.
Yeah, we need a movie on Kwame Nkrumah. Seriously.
Somebody came to me and said he wanted a movie on Yas Antwoord. He wanted me to script it for him. And I told him, give me 3 years. And he was stunned. And I told him, do you understand the amount of research that needs to be done? A lot of it is in the UK.
Yes. People don't understand that. Yes.
And you know, he wanted something quickly written.
Yeah.
But we know the story about her. But I traveled to meet the current Yas Antwoord. I went to Idrisu. I spoke with people. She was a complex woman. She's not the person that we keep on.
Yeah. There's so many stories to be told. And like you said, going outside of our country to get the information sometimes. Like there was a director I had, I think the film was called 76, a Nigerian movie about the attempted coup. I think it's on Netflix now. And so that movie actually premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival in 2015, I believe it was, 2015 or 2016. And so the director was there with some of the cast. And one of the things that he said was, because someone was saying this, that why isn't there more, you know, historical films that are made in Africa? And he was like, it took him 9 years to make that movie.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, what? 9 years? He said it took him 9 years because he said getting the rights to some of the footage he needed. So for instance, he's telling a historical story. And if there's a scene where, let's say, there's a family sitting in a living room and they're watching a clip on a TV and the clip on the TV is a news clip. And they had to get permission from the UK, from the BBC. And you have to pay all kinds of money to get this clip, all these clearances you have to go through just for a clip in a scene where you're sitting there watching a clip and the family's like, oh, look.
All the independence, you know, footage that we see on TV
is from,
we have to pay.
Right. And so he said, you know, and if you don't have a big budget, he's like, you know, you're self-funding and you're trying to get this stuff. Now you're trying to get money because you got to do this clip. It's a 30-second clip, so it's this much money.
But 9 years is actually a short time in Africa, because in Hollywood, movies take a long time to make. The average time is 8 years. So if he did it 9 years literally on his own,
he did well.
He's done incredibly done incredibly well. Okay, so we've been talking about information, your book, your essential guide for moving to Ghana.
Yes.
What kind of information does the book give to people?
I give information on what to expect as far as when you arrive, like cultural things that you should be aware of. I talk about...
For example,
in Canada and in the US, UK, wherever it may be, you go and you buy something, you just open your wallet, you take out the money, you give it to the person. There's no thought. Nobody's just, I'm taking money from you. In Ghana, you go, you take out the money, you give it to them. Then you have the person at the market, hey,
left
because
hand.
You've given your left hand to give money. And they're looking at you like you're crazy and you
and they've offended.
Don't know. Yeah, you don't know you've offended this person. And that's and it's a cultural thing. And it's happened to me. I'm left-handed. So
yeah.
I'm used to doing things with my left hand.
But you always have to switch.
But I have to consciously think about things depending on where I am. Because I find particularly with, you know, traditional people in the market and that,
yeah.
I have to stick with those things. But if I'm around, like, you know, people who are, like, who've been to the diaspora and that kind of stuff, I don't think about that because they don't. Right. So I remember when I went to buy mangoes, this woman at the market, I picked up the mango that I wanted. Like, I'm literally going to take this mango. And she started shouting about how disrespectful I was. And I was like, I'm sorry. What did I do? She's like, your left hand. You're touching my fruit with your left hand. And I was like, oh my goodness. And there was a man sitting on a bench. He's like, madame, you don't hear her accent. She's not from here, oh, please.
And you too, you also took your Aboriginal status.
And I just
I'm
was
not
like,
from here, oh.
I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So I talk about that. And I also provide resources in it. So there's information about like some shipping companies and, you know, different things that people are looking for when they're coming and making the move.
Yeah.
I talk about that when you're coming, don't come and expect to just come and get a job easily. You should take your time.
Are they that naive?
Oh, yes. There's a lot of people who
think you just land and then
you can go job hunting and get a job easily. So I talk about how it's a process.
They get a job there before they...
Right. And I mentioned that in the book, too. I mentioned that it's advisable that you research and find a connection to get work, a job offer before you actually land in Ghana. Particularly
like a year at least. Give yourself
it can take. Yes. Yes. But if you decide, because there's people who are fed up and they just want to leave where they are, like a lot of Americans with the racism and things that have been happening, they'll say, well, I just want to pack my bags and just come. And I'll advise.
Is that a good reason? I mean, go to Puerto Rico or somewhere close by just in case, you know, test it out. But
a lot of people are willing to take risks. And so I usually tell people you should have a certain amount of money. I don't say a specific amount, but
I usually say
you should have like 6 months to a year's worth of living expenses.
That's not renting at Villaggio.
You have to look at your budget because I said that they don't ask for you just for 2 months because in Canada and the U.S., it's first month's last month's rent, which is 2 months in advance.
Yeah,
Ghana, people will be asking you for a year, two years, 3 years up front.
Minimum.
You know, I had a woman through my YouTube channel who sent me a message that she has like $3,000. She wants to come to Ghana and she wants to leave America and move to Ghana. Will $3,000 last her? I said, you won't even be able to pay for your rent with $3,000. Especially if you are trying to maintain the same type of lifestyle where you are living now, $3,000 will not get that far.
$3,000, well, she could get a hall and chamber and then be able to eat.
Yes, but she's coming with children, so that's not possible. So there's a lot of people who don't have any understanding because
how expensive this country is.
Right. And then also people who've never left America or wherever they live, they've never left before, so they don't understand.
But for me, of course, people are different because the level of exposure in the U.S., you know, you get then you hear some questions and you wonder, Chale, where did this person...
Yeah. So I also say in the book that you should visit and you should stay here for a period of time, go back and then make your decision.
Go and come a couple of
times. Because if you just pack up and come, you might be in the shock of your life.
And then you have to also go through that honeymoon period. You know.
Yes, I say it's not like vacation time. When you came on vacation and you were chilling and you were out there and you're like, hey, I'm taking pictures for Instagram and hey, look where I am. Oh, I'm at this bar. Oh, I'm at this place.
And you didn't come in rainy season where your street will get flooded.
Yeah. So come when it's not holiday mode so that you can enjoy. But yeah, that book basically, to sum it up, is a response to all the questions I kept getting asked. People kept asking me the same questions over and over again. I kept...
And
com- composing the same email. I'm like, I'm composing the same email over and over again.
Yeah.
Let me just write this, put it together, and then see where it goes from there. And it's been very good. The book has like almost a full 5-star rating on Amazon.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So it's been great.
So you've got, what do we call it? You've got Year of Return Matters on. So basically, that's what you're doing up until January, right?
Yeah, the Beyond the Return events, there's over 60 events. Even tonight, this time around, we've got a lot of things that are on the calendar that include different activities that weren't necessarily on the calendars from before.
So where can somebody go and find out about these activities?
You can go to beyondthereturngh.com, or you can follow the Instagram page, which is Beyond the Return, or the Facebook page, which is also Beyond the Return. And so there's a calendar. It's like 7 pages of events. Okay. And like tonight, there is an event that we have endorsed called Prisoners. It's a play that's happening at Alliance Française.
Okay.
It is on for 3 nights, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. So 3 nights that play is on. Mm-hmm. We thought it was important to support theater because it is something that showcases the creative talents of people in Ghana.
Exactly.
So we have that on our schedule. There's also National Theatre partnered with us that we're promoting their plays throughout the month. If anybody wants to go and patronize theatre in Ghana, that Beyond the Return has supported. You're coming to Ghana from abroad. Don't just come and go to a concert to see your favorite artist, but also see some of the actors who are really putting in the work and creating stories from our perspectives here, and get some different type of comedy because there's some funny people here. And so it's good that we added those to the calendar.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the education process.
Yeah.
Give you even more before you make that move. And finally, your social media.
Yes.
How can people get in touch with you?
You can reach me on Ivy Prosper.
Mm-hmm.
My social media is Ivy Prosper everywhere. Yeah, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. It's Ivy Prosper. And even Pinterest. I haven't done Pinterest in a long time. But yeah, all my social media is Ivy Prosper.
Ivy Prosper.
Yeah, Ivy Prosper. IVYPROSPER.
Yes. Wow. Sadly, we have come to the end.
Oh, my goodness.
I know that we could have really talked about so much more.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your world with us, and good luck with your, with this month, which is going to be hectic.
Yes, it's going to be hectic.
You,
it's going
sure
to be hectic.
It's going to be, hectic, fun, and enlightening.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, meeting all the different people who come, as well as Ghanaians. Please come out and participate in all of these things. Take advantage. I want to say something really quickly.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not sure when this is going to air, but oh, yes, it's airing. You're going to edit, right?
Pick it up from Can I Say Something Very Quickly?
Yes. Can I say something very quickly? I want people to know that, because a lot of people will ask us, well, why did you put this event on your calendar and you didn't put my event on the calendar? Or they say, how can I get on your calendar? I want you to know that anybody can submit a proposal to our office to be considered for being on our calendar. And a lot of people don't realize that. They think that we have chosen who we want on it. But people submit proposals, and then the manager, the directors, the steering committee review it and see, does this fall in line with what the vision of what we're trying to do?
Uh-huh.
So submit your proposal by email. The email is support@beyondthereturngh.com. So submit your proposals as soon as possible if you want to be endorsed before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you can be endorsed for next year as well, because this is an ongoing project the whole year. Yes. And it's not just December. It's January, February. It's 12 months of the year. There's always activity happening. So if you have something coming up, please submit your email to us, and then we can review it and look at endorsing it, because I think it's important that, and all
people
regions, please,
yeah,
all regions of Ghana. We want all regions of Ghana. We don't want anybody to say we don't support all regions, because we do. It's just people in different regions aren't bringing us their ideas. So please, everyone across all 16 regions, we want your ideas.
So you've heard that, people. support@beyondthereturn.com.
GH. beyondthereturngh.com,
so that you can get your stuff in. Okay, so once again, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you
all for listening to. Thank you to my techs for doing their wonderful job, because none of this would be valid without you tuning in. So I hope you learned something from this convo, and make sure you check out Ivy's YouTube channel to go and, you know, get some new stuff. Our ancestors say, if you have not been on somebody else's farm, you cannot say that you're the only true farmer. Many people in Ghana know next to nothing about most of our region. Some people, even this common Accra self, they don't know much, not to talk of other, you know, countries outside Ghana. So also check Ivy's channel. If you can't get to the northern region, she has a video and she can give you all the facts and all the information. So do your bit of traveling. Now you can travel via the internet and learn things that you know, you probably couldn't, you know, have afforded to do before. So check out her channel and, you know, travel stuff about our own country, learn about Ghana, and then afterwards you can learn about other people. And so, we've reached the end, people. We are on AfricaGlobalRadio.com. You can get us on Instagram and Twitter at AF Global Radio, Facebook Africa Global Radio. And of course, you can send us a WhatsApp on +233 2070646 80. Arts Africa is brought to you by Africa Global Radio. Now, have a great weekend, people. Make sure you join us next Saturday, noon, 12 noon. My name is Alba K. Supreme, and we are signing out with Coming Home, because it is appropriate for the conversation we've had. Her voice is incredible. Her name is Shingai. Enjoy it. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Where I've been.